19, 1949, Frank Oppenheimer appeared as a witness before HUAC. 2 years earlier, he had denied to a newspaper reporter that he had ever been a member of the Communist Party. He had not planned to lie about his party membership, but a reporter for the Washington Times-Herald had called him late one night and explained that his paper was running a story the next morning. After reading him the article over the phone, the reporter asked for his immediate comment. "The story was full of all other kinds of allegations that were false," Frank said. "The pre-war party membership was the only true thing in it. They asked me for a statement, and I simply said the whole thing was false, which was stupid of me to do. I should have just said nothing." When the story was published, authorities at the University of Minnesota pressured Frank to give them the same denial in writing. Fearing for his job, Frank had a lawyer draft a statement swearing that he had never been a member of the Communist Party. But now, after talking it over with Jackie, Frank decided he had to tell the truth. That morning, he testified under oath that he and Jackie had been members of the Communist Party for some 3.5 years, from early 1937 until late 1940 or early 1941. He acknowledged that during these years, his party alias had been Frank Folsom. On advice of his counsel, Clifford Durr, he refused to testify about the political views of others. "I cannot talk about my friends," he said. Again and again, HUAC's counsel and various congressmen pressed Frank to name names. When Congressman Velde, the ex-FBI agent, repeatedly asked him to restate his reasons for refusing to answer their questions, Frank said he would not talk about the political affiliations of his friends because the people whom I have known throughout my life have been decent-thinking and well-meaning people. I know of no instance where they have thought, discussed, or said anything which was inimical to the purposes of the Constitution or the laws of the United States. In stark contrast to his brother, Frank stood his ground. He would not name names. He and Jackie found the whole experience surreal. Jackie had not lost her righteous anger. As she sat in the House Committee anteroom waiting to testify, she looked out the window and was startled by the contrast between Capitol Hill's marble government buildings, surrounded by manicured grounds, and the rows of tumble-down houses occupied by the city's Negro population. The children were barefoot and dressed in rags. They all looked rachitic, and most seemed undernourished. All they had to play with was junk they found in the street. As I sat there reading and listening and looking out the window, I found myself alternately worrying what the committee was going to try to do to me and getting madder and madder at the fact that I had been called down here so that some fellow could question me about being un-American. Afterwards, Frank told reporters that they had joined the party in 1937, seeking an answer to the problems of unemployment and want in the wealthiest and most productive country in the world. But they had left the party in 1940 disillusioned. He had no knowledge, he said, of atomic espionage either in Los Alamos or in Berkeley's Rad Lab. "I knew of no communist activity. Nobody ever approached me to get information, and I gave none. And I worked very hard, and I believe I made a valuable contribution." Barely an hour later, Frank learned from reporters that his resignation as an assistant professor of physics had been accepted by the University of Minnesota. He had lied 2 years earlier, and from the perspective of the university, that was reason enough for his dismissal from academic life. He had literally been 3 months away from being awarded tenure, but in a final meeting with the president of the university, it was made clear that he was finished. Frank left the president's office in tears. Frank was devastated. The full import of what had happened only hit him when he tried to go back to Berkeley. Naively, he had thought Lawrence would provide him haven, and he was shocked when Ernest turned him down. "Dear Lawrence, what is going on? 30 months ago you put your arms around me and wished me well, told me to come back and work whenever I wanted to. Now you say I am no longer welcome. Who has changed, you or I? Have I betrayed my country or your lab? Of course not. I have done nothing. You do not agree with my politics, but you never have. So I think that you must be losing your head to the point where anybody who disagrees with you about anything is not to be tolerated. I am really amazed and sore because of your action. Sincerely, Frank." A year earlier, Frank and Jackie had bought an 800-acre cattle ranch near Pagosa Springs, high in the Colorado Mountains. They had planned to use it as a summer vacation home. In the autumn of 1949, to the surprise of many of their friends, they retreated to this Spartan internal exile. "No one has offered me a job," Frank wrote Bernard Peters, "and so we are definitely planning to spend the winter here. My Christ, but it is beautiful. I think only if you have been here does staying seem to make any sense."